Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, the First Amendment and a Funeral Edition, Part 2. Thank you for tuning in. On March 2, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Snyder v. Phelps. The question in this case was whether the First Amendment shields certain military funeral protesters from tort liability for their speech. By a vote of 8-1, the court ruled in favor of the protesters. Chief Justice Roberts, joined by Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, held that the First Amendment did indeed protect the protesters from tort liability on the basis of their speech in this case. Justice Breyer also filed a concurring opinion, and Justice Alito issued a dissent. To discuss the case, we have Professor Calvin R. Massey, who is a professor at the University of California Hastings College of the Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Massey.
Hello, this is Calvin Massey, and I'm here to talk about Snyder against Phelps, a case decided on March 2nd by the Supreme Court. This case presented a conflict between imposition of tort liability for personal injuries caused by speech and the First Amendment's guarantee of freedom of speech. By an 8-1 vote, the court held that tort liability may not be imposed for utterly indecent, outrageous, extreme, atrocious speech that is intolerable in a civilized community and which inflicts serious injury if that speech is of public concern. A little background helps to understand this decision. Marine Lance Corporal Matthew Snyder was killed in action in Iraq, and his grieving parents chose a Maryland Roman Catholic church for his funeral. 2 days before the funeral, the Westboro Baptist Church of Topeka, Kansas, announced their intent to protest the funeral. The Westboro Church, founded over 50 years ago by Fred Phelps, who remains as its minister, has a congregation of 60 or 70 members, most of whom are related to Phelps. The Westboro Church has become known for its belief that God punishes America for its tolerance of homosexuality by the death of American servicemen. To dramatize that belief, members of the Westboro Church picket military funerals. At Corporal Snyder's funeral, they carried signs reading, "God hates fags," "Semper Fi, fags," "Pope in hell," "God hates the USA," "Thank God for 9/11," "Priests rape boys," "Thank God for dead soldiers," and "God hates you." None of those signs were visible to funeral attendees, including Corporal Snyder's father. After the funeral, the Phelpses posted on their publicly available website an article entitled "The Burden of Marine Lance Corporal Matthew Snyder," which accused the divorced parents of Matthew of teaching their son that God is a liar, to defy his creator, to condone divorce and adultery, and to raise him for the devil. The post declared that God intended Matthew to die and excoriated the whorehouse called St. John Catholic Church, where Matthew fulfilled his calling. Albert Snyder saw the signs when he viewed television news coverage of his son's funeral. He later encountered and read the Phelps' web posting when he conducted an internet search for his son's name. Snyder sued the Phelps' in federal court, and the jury returned a verdict for Snyder on his claims of intentional infliction of emotional distress and invasion of privacy, awarding compensatory and punitive damages of nearly $11 million, reduced after post-trial motions to $5 million. The Fourth Circuit reversed on free speech grounds. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the opinion for 8 members of the court. Justice Breyer concurred in the opinion, but also wrote separately. Only Justice Alito dissented. The court said that resolution of the First Amendment claim turned largely on whether the speech is of public or private concern. Speech is of public concern, said the court, when it relates to any matter of political, social, or other concern to the community, or when it is newsworthy, or when it is of general interest and value to the community, no matter how controversial or inappropriate it may be. To determine when any particular speech is of public or private concern, courts must examine the content, form, and context of the speech. That means that courts must evaluate what was said, where it was said, and how it was said. court thought that the picketers' signs, though short of refined social or political commentary, were commentary on matters of public import: the political and moral conduct of the United States and its citizens, the fate of our nation, homosexuality in the military, and scandals involving the Catholic clergy. The fact that the signs were exhibited in the context of a funeral made no difference, given that the picketers were on public land next to a public street at a distance of 1,000 feet from the church. There was no evidence that the picketers had a private feud with Snyder and employed ostensible public commentary to carry on a private vendetta. Indeed, the evidence showed that the picketers have a long history of their particular brand of public commentary, and that the injury inflicted on Corporal Snyder's grieving father was mere collateral damage, no matter how deep the anguish and pain suffered. The court observed that the actions of the Westboro picketers would be subject to reasonable, content-neutral, time, place, or manner restrictions, but expressed no opinion on the laws of 43 states that restrict funeral picketing. But because liability in this case was founded on the content of the speech, indeed its viewpoint, and those views were matters of public concern, the First Amendment shielded the Westboro speakers from tort liability. The court reiterated its view, previously expressed in Hustler magazine against Falwell, that making the outrageousness of the speech the linchpin of liability raises a constitutionally unacceptable danger that liability will be imposed because of a jury's subjective dislike of the particular expression. The court ruled that liability for invasion of privacy was barred because Snyder was not a captive audience. There was no substantial privacy interest being invaded in an essentially intolerable manner. The picketers were 1,000 yards removed from the church. Snyder did not see their message at or on the way to the funeral, and there was no interference with the funeral service itself. Justice Breyer's short concurrence emphasized the narrowness of the court's ruling. He specifically noted that the majority opinion said nothing about internet postings, nor did it say much about television broadcasting. He hinted that imposition of tort liability might be valid when it is proportional to the state's interest in protecting its citizens from severe emotional injury. But he left no clues how a court might assess this proportionality, and he was writing only for himself. Justice Alito saw the Phelps' picketing and their later web posting as a vicious verbal assault. He contended that a reasonable observer of the signs would have assumed that there was a connection between the messages and Corporal Snyder, that a person might well have understood that the protesters were falsely asserting that Corporal Snyder was gay. Only Justice Alito mentioned the Phelps' later web posting, which was focused on Corporal Snyder's parents, and which Justice Alito thought went far beyond commentary on matters of public concern and constituted a specific attack on the Snyder family. To Justice Alito, none of this was comment on matters of public concern. Nor did it matter that the Westboro defendants did not harbor a private grudge. If the commentary was not of public concern, the motive of their attack was irrelevant. And the fact that the speech was uttered in public was similarly irrelevant. To Justice Alito, this was an assault on a private person in order to attract publicity, making it newsworthy and thus of public concern. Though he did not use this metaphor, Justice Alito seemed to think that the court had done what the medieval alchemists could not: turn lead into gold, constitutional gold. A lot of questions remain. Is speech of public concern simply because it attracts a news camera? May a speaker mount a brutal verbal assault on a private person so long as the tenor of the remarks raises issues of general interest and value to the community? Though the court said nothing about it, may liability attach if the speech, even though of public concern, contains false statements of fact about a private figure? If so, is liability for actual damages premised on negligence, and liability for punitive damages premised on the knowing or reckless false statement of fact, as is true in defamation cases? We are left with a decision, but not a lot of guidance. Taken at face value, the court's opinion indicates that injurious speech that is of public concern is constitutionally protected, absent the presence of some other quality, such as fighting words. That rule, if it is the rule, enables people to attack private figures on matters of the deepest personal significance, so long as the attack is couched in the language of public discourse. Public discourse must be zealously protected, but one has to wonder why it was not possible or desirable to draw a more nuanced line. As it is, the court has reaffirmed its commitment to robust, uninhibited, wide-open, and even vicious public discourse, no matter how much damage is inflicted along the way. Perhaps that is the price of free speech. The Westboro picketers show us how high the price may climb.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.